The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network. I'm not afraid, to take a stand.
See Live Off the Record with Shivago Line is sponsored by Fidelity Bank of Bahamas, Janae's Uniform Center, RF Banking Trust, and Royal Star Assurance.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. I'm so glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Wednesday afternoon. I trust you are doing well. If you want to give us a call today on the show, the numbers to do so are as follow. That's 323-6232 or 325-4316 You can text us on 422-4796. That's 422-4796, or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. That's 439-3043. We are live on Cable Bahamas, channel 969. That's the way my mother listens to the show. Or you can catch us on BTC Flow Channel 612. That's BTC Flow Channel 612. So, I know the Prime Minister has spoken on FTX, and I know that you want to talk about some of that stuff. I'm sorry. I have some guests today that are going to be talking to us about some very important things, and we'll get to FTX when we get to FTX. Suffice it to say that I think the Prime Minister's tone and posture was appropriate in the circumstance. And, you know, we'll comment upon it some more. But today, by the way, let me remind you, you know, today is World International Day of Tolerance. So I don't know what you can tolerate, who you can tolerate. But this is one of those days celebrated by the United Nations where you're supposed to demonstrate your capacity to deal with people who are different than you are, who believe differently than you believe, who may act differently than you believe, not acting inappropriately, but acting differently. People who may look differently than you look and have persuasions maybe differently than you have. But we're not talking about tolerance so much today. We're talking about how to deal with something that is a chronic reality for the Commonwealth of the Bahamas. And today I have with us Nurse Anita Cates. And Nurse Anita Cates is a certified diabetes educator with the Family Medicine Center, ACE Diabetes. ACE Diabetes is a charity. And listen, many of us Bahamians are pre-diabetic up to about a year ago, a little over a year ago. That's what they told me I was, pre-diabetic. So that was a warning shot for me. And I did some things and I went and did my executive physical and the doctor told me, listen, if you were pre-diabetic, there's not a hint of any pre-diabetes in you, thank God. For wisdom, but I have family members who plague with diabetes. I've seen people who plague with diabetes. One nurse said to me, Shivago, people need to take diabetes seriously because when you get to the point where you have to do dialysis, I'm only telling you what the nurse said. Okay, the nurse said, listen, that dialysis could be hell for people. I'm telling you what she said. That was enough for me. Welcome, Nurse Cates. Thank you for joining us today. How are you?
Oh, Shivago, it is awesome to be on here today. And I must admit, I was pretty impressed by being introduced. Oh, the music beforehand was Eminem. So thank you so much for that.
That's our theme song. That's our theme song. We're going to stand up.
I feel that. Yeah, I quite like Eminem. And it's funny, you know, you're talking about numbers and FTX. And really, you know, at the end of the day, when it comes down to FTX and numbers, it doesn't matter. And what I actually want to talk about is the numbers that are affecting our Bahamas. And I'm just going to throw something out to you here, right? So we have about 290,000 adults in the Bahamas, roundabout, according to the International Diabetes Federation.
Right.
And out of that, how many thousands of people out of 290,000 have diabetes, do you think?
Let me see if I could venture a guess.
Don't go Googling now.
No, not at all. I'm going to venture a guess. I would say about 40-45% of them.
You know, it's very interesting. So let me break this down a bit. We estimate it's about 26,000 people diagnosed with diabetes,
right?
Which equates to about 94%.
Hold on. We have an adult population of 290,000.
Yeah.
Right? And you said we have how many diagnosed? But,
About 26,000, 27,000.
Right.
And they're kind of estimating about 9.4%. I mean, you'll have to work those numbers out.
When you said 90%, I was getting almost, oh my God, we're incredible.
Yeah, I'd be scared too. But Shivago,
But those are the diagnosed people, right?
Ah. Right. And that was where I was going. And the other thing that you mentioned, so, right, there's a group of undiagnosed people. We know that, right? Mm-hmm. And also there's a group of people, just like you were explaining at the beginning, are the pre-diabetics. Mm-hmm. These are people who do not have a diagnosis of diabetes, mm-hmm. but their blood sugar is elevated mm-hmm. enough for it to be diagnosed as pre-diabetes. And that, we believe, take up about 21%. We don't have numbers on that, IDF. But so we're looking at, you know, if we extrapolate that out, like 30%. So quite honestly, you weren't far off, really, with that 40% number.
I agree. I could see that. I can easily see that that is true.
Yeah. And those are numbers that, now let's think about, like diabetes in itself and numbers, because we're talking about numbers right now, is, you know, it affects so many people as a family. Mm-hmm. It affects people's back pocket, right? Mm-hmm. It's expensive having a condition. Mm-hmm. And also the impact on the healthcare system. As you mentioned, the nurse was saying, you know, wow, the last thing you need is your kidneys to go, and then you need to go on dialysis. So having diabetes is an expensive job, really. Mm. However, I do want to say it doesn't have to be like that. And that's what I want to talk about today, Shivago, is just the hope. There really is hope. It doesn't have to be like this.
It is regarded, nurse, as one of the most manageable diseases out there, once you apply yourself.
You know what? I absolutely believe so. And I've seen that in practice. And I'm actually going to flip this back to you. Okay. So you've been in this, right? Your physician said, listen, you have pre-diabetes. You went back and there was no signs. Mm-hmm. of pre-diabetes or diabetes. Mm-hmm. So what did you do? How did you change that?
So, you know, I do an annual physical every year. And so I track a lot of things on an annual basis. And so once they told me that, they talked about my cholesterol and all that kind of stuff. So I spoke with a dietitian about mm-hmm. the way I eat, the things I eat. So we were able to get to understand some things that I needed to change. So one of the things I did was I stopped using that regular oil that we use, and I only started using olive oil and coconut oil for all my cooking preparations and what have you. I increased the greens and vegetables and fruits in my diet. And I think I have to say the most solid contribution was I did intermittent fasting. I've been intermittent fasting now for well over a year. And so it has created for me, I think, a fair amount of reduction in a lot of the bad things I was doing to contribute to my health situation. Because, you know, with every meal, I was having like a soda.
Yes, right? Of course.
I'm doing lots of starch and so forth and so forth. So I really, it was a change in lifestyle on a dietary level. And then I exercised a lot. I have a knee problem. Yes, can you hear me?
I can now.
I have a knee problem, so I can't walk as much as I'd like or run. So I started cycling.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, so a lot of that, those were the combinations of things.
So awesome. So you changed the type of fat in your diet, and then you also pulled back on the carbohydrates, and you pulled back on the sodas, and you pulled back on the carbohydrates, and you also mentioned intermittent fasting.
Yes.
And all of those are great. So, and I do want to talk about that, but first of all, Shivaga, is it okay if I just talk a little bit about the difference between type 1 diabetes and type 2 diabetes?
Please educate us. Yeah. This is what we do.
It's because I don't want people to get confused, right? So if there are many types of diabetes, but I'm specifically going to speak about type 1 and type 2. So they're very different. They're kind of the same family, if you will. In other words, there is an issue with blood sugars. Now let's take type 1 diabetes. And type 1 often happens in children or slightly earlier on in life. And what happens is that the body can no longer produce insulin. And that is caused by an autoimmune response. So the body no longer produces insulin. And insulin is very important because if you imagine that insulin is a key, it unlocks the doorways on the cells in the body to allow glucose to go inside. And if we don't unlock the doorway, it stays in the blood. So I think often people get very confused with type 1 diabetes and believe that it's happened because the children or the adults were eating too many sweets, and if they only ate better or exercised, then they would not have diabetes. But that is actually not true. That is that's pretty much false information. On the other hand, type 2 diabetes, it's slightly different, where a person can have, they have insulin available, but their body can't use it. They can use the insulin that's on board. So by eating healthily and exercising, it may help to prevent diabetes and to have a different lifestyle. And that's what you were talking about with the food. And that, I do actually want to say too, I think there's a lot of stigma that's attached with it too. Oh, you've not been eating well, you've not been exercising, it's your own fault that you've got type 2. But that is not the case. And I see that my friends come in, and I'm sure that he would love to talk a little bit more about type 1 diabetes and kind of like the difference, but there is an absolute difference between the two conditions.
And maybe to help us understand too, because I don't know if there, and I love to learn, and I'm never shy to ask a question because I'm afraid people might think I don't know. Is there ever a genetic predisposition toward diabetes?
Yes. So,
and I think we have Dario. Is that Dario? Go ahead, Dario.
Okay, I think he's just probably logging in. Yeah.
Is so there a genetic predisposition?
Absolutely. So to just quickly speak on behalf of Dario as he's connecting, type 1 diabetes can be genetic. So it's not uncommon for you to see like a cluster of family members with type 1 diabetes. So mom, dad, your sister, brother, it's possible, not always, but you are definitely genetically more susceptible to it. In type 2, it's pretty much the same thing. You're more susceptible to type 2 diabetes if mom, dad, brothers, sisters have it as well. Yes. So despite of healthy eating and exercise in type 2, you may have the condition because it is genetic.
Mm. Okay. And that's important for people to know. Do we have Dario on now? Dario,
I am here. Please
fully introduce yourself. It's okay. No problems.
Yes. I am Dario Charlton. I am a 37-year-old, about 18-year type 1 diabetic. I've been living with it for the past 10 years or so since I've met Nurse Anita Cates and her amazing team. Mm-hmm. And just really want to share my story and experiences with transitioning from suffering from diabetes to living with it.
I'm so glad you were on, because one of the things I'm hoping, because you're the experience with that, is that you can talk to people about what that was like, you know, what the symptoms and those kinds of things.
Yes. If the floor is mine, you know, I was diagnosed back in college. And so it was a tough transition for me. The symptoms that I experienced was extreme fatigue, a rapid loss of weight, like 30 pounds over the course of 2 months, an extreme thirst that just could not be quenched. And, you know, being in college, you start to question, like, you know, I don't drink. So should I be drinking? Is this my body telling me I should drink rum? And so you kind of start to try a lot of things, just sort of being curious, and the lack of knowledge that's out there, by the way. Your hunger goes all the way up. So your appetite is extreme. And, you know, thankfully I had a family member that was close by who saw the symptoms and understood what they normally would be correlated with. And, you know, they woke me up one day and say, hey, let's go. We're going to go to the doctor. And, you know, after getting a finger prick and being told that my sugar was 550, when the normal is between 70 and 100,
that's like close to comatizing situation.
Yeah, it was really scary, like extremely scary and extremely urgent. I was, you know, rushed to hospital and immediately being worked on to try and identify, you know, exactly what type of diabetes, what my needs are, and, you know, going through those motions. The one drawback I would say is that at that point, there wasn't enough information given to me except, okay, you're on insulin, take this amount of times a day, and make sure that you eat food. And so it didn't give me the best start to my diabetic journey.
Okay, so before we go further than that, Nurse, because people are out there, you know, Nurse, talk to us about if you're the nurse attending to somebody and they show up with a blood sugar level of 500, what's going through your head? your mic is muted, Nurse.
Yeah, that's a great question. The first thing is, oh, wow, we've got to get this blood sugar down. So sometimes it really is an emergency, like in Dario's case. We've really got to get on top of that. I'm sure when Dario was first diagnosed, that he was actually really, really poorly and would have needed, I guess you needed a drip, right, Dario? And were you in hospital for a while as well?
Yeah, I spent a full week in hospital, like 7 or 8 days.
Wow. Right. So now, very interesting. So Dario is super, super sick. He's got, I'm sure he has ketones on board, and there's a lot of things happening with his body because he has type 1 diabetes. On the flip side, and this is where it gets so interesting, is that I've also been in clinic. Somebody's walked in through the door, and I've said, let me just check your blood sugar. Mm. And it's been over 500, and they're looking at me saying, but I feel fine. So, yeah, so my mind kind of trips out, and also dependence on what the patient needs or dependence on how I act.
But if unchecked, so Dario's situation goes by unchecked because he just thinks maybe I have a flu, maybe I have something, and he doesn't. If that kid continues to elevate, what's going to happen?
So sadly, in people with type 1 and goes unchecked, and we see this far more than what we should, the body starts to become acidotic. It becomes acid because of the ketones in the body. And we call that diabetic ketoacidosis. And this is a very, very, very serious condition, which leads on to coma, as you were talking about, and eventually, very sadly, can actually cause the passing of somebody. So this is a very, diabetic ketoacidosis is a very serious condition. Mm.
So Dario, you go there, you get diagnosed, you're in hospital, they treat you, you leave with what you now regard as less than adequate information. What happens after that for you?
The struggle begins.
So by the way, they're asking you now to take insulin. How are you taking that?
Via syringe. Via needle in your stomach or in your arm, or in your upper thighs or your buttocks, whichever is most comfortable. But, you know, with some of the better areas for absorption being your stomach, your abdomen, that area.
This is all new to you. This is taking of a needle.
Oh, brand new. Never seen before. And the needles issued, those were just, I think those were cousins to kitchen knives, the steak knives. Those needles were thick and huge. So, you know, it was a lot to get used to and understanding, okay, you know, still a college lifestyle, you're used to only eating fast foods and the like. And, you know, thankfully, the follow-up visit includes a trip to the dietitian, who gives you this stringent diet that's nowhere close to what a college student would ever consider being on. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, your world in itself turns upside down. Mm-hmm. It asks you to mature very quickly. And, you know, back then, almost 18 years ago, we didn't have all the access to internet, at least not readily available at, you know, in my area. Thankfully, you know, I was in college, you can go online at school and get some information, but again, still limited access. And so that's one of the main reasons why we want to push so much this month to provide awareness and education for people that are living with or suffering from diabetes so they can find better ways to manage their condition.
We have to take a break, but this is so intriguing for me. We're going to take a break, and then when we come back, we're going to continue into this discussion about diabetes, folks. Listen, it's a chronic issue in the Bahamas. You're listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. We'll be back with Nurse Anita Cates and Mr. Dario. Dario, what's your surname again?
Charlton.
Okay, we'll be back after this break. Cold or warm, send you know
that you're not alone. Master
Car? I ain't Master Car. The lady run into me, Master Car.
I hope she had insurance.
If she had insurance, she hop out, pull out her phone, pull out the Royal Star Assurance app, and bang, she was on a video call with an RSA rep, sending pictures of her damage, my damage, filing a claim on the spot.
For real? Our insurance have that kind of app?
You gotta go to RSA for that.
Download the RSA app today or visit rsabahamas.com to submit your claim online. Live chat available weekdays 9 to 5.
Isn't it time you conquered your investment goals? With RF Mutual Funds, you can access a range of investments within a single fund. That means you get access to top-performing local stocks, along with exposure to international markets, add expert management and competitive returns by 25.16% with our targeted equity fund, and you won't just meet your investment goals, you'll conquer them. Get started with RF Mutual Funds today at rfgroup.com.
How important collecting your money can be to the success of your business. Start your relationship with Fidelity today so that we can show you the many options available to you with our merchant services. From click and pay options online to merchant terminals and e-commerce options, we're here to help your business succeed. For more details, speak to one of our business development officers at 356-7764 in Nassau or 352-6676 in Freeport. Visit our website at fidelitygroup.com or visit any of our branches. Fidelity, we're good for you.
Shanae's Chesapeake Road Christmas Wonderland is open under the Big Tent. Get your Christmas trees in pink, frosted, green, or white in a variety of sizes. Musical Christmas LED and laser lights, a large variety of tree ornaments, lighted angels and Santa tree toppers, bright and lively colored Christmas balls in all sizes, garlands, wreaths, tree skirts, stockings, and lots more. Add flowers, picks, and decorative mesh to brighten up your home or office this holiday season. And don't forget the toys at Shanae's Chesapeake Road. Check our selections online at www.shanae's.com.
This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM.
I'm not afraid, to take a stand, Everybody, come take my hand, We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Wednesday afternoon, where we're speaking with Nurse Anita Cates and Mr. Dario Charlton. We're talking about diabetes, folks. If you want to give us a call, the numbers are 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can text us on 422-4796. Or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. Nurse, now Dario ended up doing needles to whichever area was required, but not everyone ends up doing needles. Am I right or wrong about that?
You're right. But let's just point out, in Dario's situation, remember, his pancreas is not producing insulin. And right. If he doesn't get immediate treatment, he is going to pass, sadly. But let me tell you, insulin actually is an incredible, incredible medication. It does exactly what it's supposed to. It's a hormone. It's natural, and it saves lives. I mean, we've had insulin now for over 100 years. And like Dario was mentioning, God bless him, those needles were ginormous back in the day. Yeah. And thankfully, now those needles are tiny and you don't even feel them. So first off, I just want to say that if you do have to go on insulin to get your blood sugars down, I don't want you to be afraid. It doesn't mean that you've done something wrong, but actually it's going to help you and you're going to feel so much better. However, in type 2 diabetes, you don't have to go on insulin initially. It really depends. And let me explain why. In type 2 diabetes, there is still some insulin that's being produced. But sometimes it's not enough. And other times, if you've had diabetes for a long time, type 2, and your blood sugars have been very, very high, what happens is that it causes something called glucose toxicity, meaning that the glucose becomes toxic to the cells that make insulin, and they kind of get really tired. They get tired out. So in order to keep that person fit and well and not end up in a position of having no insulin and feeling very unwell, we give them insulin. But we don't start there in people with type 2. We usually start with diet and exercise, some oral medication, and that sometimes is enough for the body to actually use the insulin naturally that that person has. So no, we don't always have to start on insulin for people with type 2, but with type 1, it's a necessary drug, and it is exceptionally, exceptionally beneficial. And thank goodness we have it, because Dario would not be here today if he wasn't taking his injections.
Yes.
And this is the thing that makes diabetes so manageable, is because the science is such that the treatment has a great deal of responsiveness, right? So that if Dario does what he has to do, he will be okay, right?
Absolutely. Yes. Sorry, Dario, go ahead. Let you take this one.
Yeah, I was going to say yes, and then I guess the difficulties in which some people may assume that it's the person not doing what they're supposed to do is that real life takes place. So a lot of my medication and my regimens were tailored to my lifestyle, meaning, you know, I was working in the hotel industry. At one point, I was in a position where, you know, you're facing guests 7-8 hours a day. And so it's very difficult for you to eat the amount of times or take the amount of shots that, you know, may be prescribed. And so you're asking your doctor to give you a regimen or a type of insulin that can work with your fast-paced lifestyle. And then there are others that may switch and are doing the same regimens, but their lifestyle is a bit more relaxed and laid back. So, you know, the responsiveness of the medication has to be coupled with exactly what it is that the patient themselves are doing and working along with their doctor to make those decisions as quick as possible so as to not cause any, you know, long-term effects or have any challenges over a period of time before changing. So that's, you know, those were some of the things that I experienced differently. Sometimes you take a shot saying, okay, I'm going to eat in the next 10 minutes and something else comes up at work. And so, you know, you're forced with handling the emergency. And, you know, when you let your mind lose track of the fact that you just took a shot, then you yourself may become an emergency because your sugar is now too low and you're fighting and putting everything you can find to put in your mouth in order to get it back to a level where you're comfortable and not going into a hypoglycemic state, which is extremely low blood sugar.
Yeah, it's interesting you should mention that because nurse earlier said, you know, this isn't just Dario's illness. This is just my illness. This is our family's illness, because I've had family members who have gone into that low blood sugar situation, and it, especially being elderly, and it looks scary. It's scary, right? You are thinking, and they are thinking, I am dying. So now it's not just you or me. It's the whole family that's now part of the drama and the trauma. Isn't that so?
Correct. So I've been, what I did in order to kind of keep myself with a support team, every environment that I have to be in for a prolonged period of time, I found someone or a group of people to kind of teach them my condition and what steps they should take if I was to be found this way or that way. And you have to be bold enough and also sociable enough in order to make those kind of things happen. I've had people on various different jobs that I've worked who were comfortable enough with helping me with taking my shots when you know, I can't take off my clothes. So, you know, they're able to just give me it in my arm or something. So those things are definitely necessary. So it becomes a community involvement in a better way to manage it. Having that support team is priceless. It's just priceless. Yeah.
So nurse, in terms of all that we should be aware of this month and all that, the emphasis and start us off from step one, what should we be aware of? What should we be looking at? What should we be doing?
You know, I think Dario hit this on the head, is that the whole basis for awareness is actually education and becoming knowledgeable about the condition and getting the right information as well. So and that's why we're on the show. You know, education is the foundation. And Terrio said 18 years ago, it really wasn't available here. The internet was lacking. So this is why we're on, is to learn more about diabetes through organizations locally, ACE Diabetes, the Bahamas Association of Diabetes Educators, and asking your physician, and going online as well. But I do want to say going online does have its pitfalls, because whereas 18 years ago we had no information, now we have way too much information and people get confused. So here are some of the things, that the most important things that we need to be aware of. Number one, just like you did, Shivago, what is your status? Getting your annual physical done is imperative. We mentioned earlier, somebody could have a blood sugar of 500 and don't even know. Mm. So first thing is, and everybody can do this, is to go and get your annual physical done. And when you get those blood results back, don't just let the doctor say, oh, your blood sugars are fine. Get a copy of those blood results. Go online if you want and just double check that those numbers are within normal range. So that is number one, is knowing your own status, knowing your own numbers. And also looking on, there's a little test you can do online as well to find out if you are at risk of developing prediabetes and at risk of developing diabetes. And that's just a few quick questions, but that can make you aware. Mm. And the other thing I really feel that we need to be aware of, which is very, very important, is to know the difference between what is type 1 diabetes and what is type 2, because they are completely different. Mm. And in Dario's case, he's going to need a different support system, maybe, than somebody who has type 2 diabetes. So beginning to become aware of that, and if you have a member of your family who has type 1, to actually engage with them and have a conversation on how you can assist. So that would be very, very important as well. Mm-hmm.
Dario, isn't it true that, like, when you have family members who have diabetes and really require a lot of support in it, it takes a great deal of compassion and patience, doesn't it? Because, you know, there's a great deal of vigilance concern, and sometimes you have to alter your lifestyle and schedule around their needs, especially if they are elderly.
Correct. And the elderly, just as is adolescents or children that are living with it, it takes on a new heightened level of awareness, being, like you said, vigilant to everything that's happening with them, especially during those hours when they are asleep, because they're not awake. They don't know what their body's going through. And, you know, Nurse Cates may have touched on, or she may very well touch on, the fact that some people develop a state of being where their body gets so used to their blood sugars being at a certain level, whether high or low, that it can be extremely dangerous for them, because they go from not being aware of what's going on to them to being in a state of emergency. Mm-hmm. And so that's why it becomes so important. Thankfully, technology has advanced to a point where we can have third-party monitors. So, mm-hmm. you know, you can have a glucose monitor on, and now your mother can tell what's going on with your blood sugars from across the world, and be able to pick up a phone and either get in contact with you or, you know, someone else that's there as your support, and get you the kind of help that you need a bit more quicker than we could have 18 years ago.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, no, you can go ahead. Only because
there's a question, nurse. Here says, interesting topic today. If a person is already subjected to dialysis treatments, is there anything that can be done to make the treatments a little more bearable, especially for older senior patients?
Ooh, wow, that feels, that's a lot. You know, I think one of the things you mentioned, Shivago, and especially in this case, is compassion and love and encouragement and prayer, just to make everything a little bit easier and to have that network around you is going to definitely make it more bearable. That's a tough one. That really is a tough one.
Yeah, it is a tough situation. And I think that's the sense I was getting from the nurse, the dietitian, who told me about, you know, what people go through who have to deal with dialysis. I think that was part of the sense she wanted to convey, you know, is that, and her message was not to you know, put people off, but a message was to say, if you can avoid this in your life, please do what you have to do to avoid it. That's the message she was sending.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that is key, right? Because we're talking about choices here. So there are situations where, honestly, you don't know. If you don't know, you don't know. There's nothing you can do about it, right? And you really are trying to do your best with very little knowledge. So we are blessed in this situation where we do have access to knowledge, and we do have the ability to make choices where we can make better decisions in spite of having a complication. So I do want to point out, yes, complications are very, very difficult. And I know Dario can absolutely speak into this from a personal perspective. And I want to say, it doesn't have to happen. That is the great thing about diabetes, is that if we start early enough with the education, the small changes, we can actually live a very happy, healthy life. But even when we do have complications, and Dario, like I said, I'd like you to speak into this a little bit more. I'm going to pass it over to you in managing those complications associated with diabetes.
Now, let me just give you guys a little bit of information so that you can also relax. We're going to, to the extent you can, because somebody else is going to join us too to talk about this day, and I'm interested to have them join. We're going to take a news break at 3, and then if you can, you can stay. But we'll go till 3:15. I do have another guest after that, but till 3:15 after. So if you can, nurse.
Okay.
Mario, okay?
Yes. Sounds good. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather, cold or warm.
So fair. is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM.
I'm not afraid, to take a stand, Everybody, come take my hand, We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather.
Welcome back. Ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad that you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Wednesday afternoon. For a little while yet, we're going to speak with guest nurse Anita Cates and Dario Charlton. And joining us also is John Benjamin, who also has a familiarity with this diabetes phenomena that we are speaking about today. And Nash, after we're done with them, you know, I have the great, ever great David Williams, who's going to talk to us about a passionate endeavor he's always involved with. John, you've been listening to Nurse Cates and also to Mr. Charlton. Your experience about dealing with diabetes.
Hi, Shivago. Hi, Nurse Cates and Dario. It was great
to be John.
Here today. Hey, you guys
John.
Can hear me, right?
Absolutely. Loud and clear.
And I want you all to know, just so you know, Dario got inflicted when he was in university. John, who I know very well, is a financial services professional, college educated. So I just want y'all to know this disease don't look around for people and say, no, you don't count. You're not the one I'm going to do it to. This affects a lot of people of different persuasion. Right, John?
Yeah, diabetes don't discriminate.
That's very true, Shivago, you're right on talking. I don't like to call diabetes a disease, even though I know the medical world calls it a disease. I like to call it a challenge, and a challenge that could be controlled. I have been fortunate to have diabetes for the last 48 years. Now I'm giving my age away. I'm sounding very old.
Man, at the age of you stop as me and you in the same set. So.
Exactly, but you're the older one. at the age of 8, I was showing the same signs like Dario was having. Like, we're both type 1. You know, our pancreas is not producing the insulin. And at the time, as an eight-year-old, my mother noticed me drinking a lot of water, losing a lot of weight. And it just wasn't, you know, it was just unusual, especially since I was already a skinny kid and I was still losing 5, 6, 7 pounds within a week or two. Immediately we went to Dr. Julie Wershing at Hardaka Clinic. See, I can still remember those days. She did the blood test. I have no idea what my numbers were at the time, but it was enough to say, we're going up to the hospital now. And the only two things that I knew about hospitals back then as an eight-year-old was that one, you were having a major operation, or two, you were having a baby. And I was like, wait now, I'm not having a baby, so I must be having an operation. And my mother and Dr. Julie were both saying, you know, this is something you're going to have to do every day of your life. And I was getting scared to death now because I thought it was going to be an operation. We went to the hospital and, you know, everything was done in the children's ward. The babies were in there. They're getting their blood done. I was in the same area. I was so fascinated how they took blood from a little baby. And this is still sketched in my mind very clearly. And, you know, they got ready to do my shot. And like Dario says, the needles were like 500 inches thick, so you could feel it really going in. But for some reason, it didn't bother me that much because I was so intrigued by the baby. They gave me my first shot, and then they said, this is it. This is what you're going to have to do for the rest of your life. And I was like, that's it? You know, I expected a major operation, major surgery. And I took it. That was it. I think my faith in God, my mother, my doctor, my family, my father, my school, my best friends, everybody took a part in my role of fighting and handling diabetes, which made it a lot more controllable and much more accepting. I know not everybody has that support, but it's so important to have that support. And, you know, as an 8-year-old and 9-year-old and 10-year-old, before you get those teenage years, you start worrying about, you know, what am I going to do with life? It's, you know, why did God do this to me? Mm-hmm. And I started questioning myself. I said, you know, why didn't, you know, why not me? You know, mm-hmm. I had the moral background. I had the strength. I had the faith. Maybe I could be an example to others. That was my thinking as an 8, 10-year-old. I was, wow. You know, very smart at the time, Shivago, so. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know. You're a pretty bright fella.
But I don't know all of that.
John, tell me something, though, because this is it's really fascinating. You know, you now have to do this every day. So was this like once every day and you're going to school, you're doing your young child thing, and this right. is your experience. So what is happening? How does that work? Is it in the morning you do it, or what happens?
But back in the day, you know, I was on one injection a day, so you had to guess all day long. As I grew older and hit puberty, and for better control, because your pancreas is working all day long, as you know, the average person, I don't say the normal person, but everybody's pancreas works throughout the day. Mm-hmm. One needle a day is not going to be enough to cover it, because you got to decide what are you going to eat all day long, what are you going to, you know, exercise. So I graduated to 2 needles a day, then up to 4 needles a day to cover each meal and before I go to bedtime. Wow. Now, as of 3 weeks ago, and this is where you can teach an old dog new tricks, I've actually been placed on a pump so I can have absolute total control. Mm. And my pump produces, you know, I decide, you know, basically I also have a glucose monitoring device on as well. These are small little pods put throughout your body. And they talk to each other like a pancreas would. Mm. So my glucose measurement will tell my pump, listen, your sugar's going down. You need more insulin, or I'm going to eat so much food. So I put that in. So right now, because of this device, I no longer have to, after 48 years, it's the first time in 48 years, I don't have to take an injection or injections daily. Mm. So, you know, Martin... And again, we talk about expenses and insurance, and not everybody can afford this. There are means and ways and programs. I know Dario is very up to date on getting health programs and ways to afford certain devices. It may not be the top brand of a monitor, but it's a monitor that can help you in the long run. And my encouragement to anybody out there who has diabetes, it's scary, yes. But it's not the end of the world. You know, we have challenges. There are people out there with much more serious diseases that they have no choice in controlling. We have a challenge that we can control, and we can live normal lives.
Well, I can tell you, I have worked with cabinet ministers who have battled and have to deal with on a daily basis with diabetes, and several, as a matter of fact. So just to demonstrate that people can go ahead and live normal lives, and you and I have interacted, debated, and I didn't see any let up in your activism on the basis of that. So you're right. The extent to which you can deal with the protocols and the requirements of dealing with this challenge means you can live a fairly normal life, right, nurse?
Yeah, I'm right here, absolutely, and. I really feel that I've known John for a long time, and he really is an expert in positivity and being able to say, okay, I have this condition. I am going to making the best of what I have been given. And Dario is the same. And that is, for me, now, I can talk a good talk about diabetes, but I certainly don't go through the everyday that Dario and John go through. Mm-hmm. And I am amazed at the power that is in both of these gentlemen. And they say, you know what? Diabetes isn't going to get me down. I am going to be focused. I am going to take care of myself. And I do want to say that both of these gentlemen, too, are also giving back to the diabetes community and continually saying, hey, you don't have to suffer. Help is available. And just so much encouragement, so much love. And it's just really, really great to see that, yes, although there are challenges, you can live a very healthy and successful life with type 1 and type 2 diabetes.
John and Dario, tell us about, like, I mean, how you're, you know, I happen to believe, I mean, please forgive me if I'm wrong, but I happen to believe that most things that challenge us in this country, when our diet has to be adjusted to address it, is the biggest hurdle we have, right? Because we love our food. We love to eat what we eat. Tell us about your approach to dieting, to your diet and nutrition on the basis of this challenge you have.
Yeah, I want to say first that, you know, 48 years of being a type 1 is amazing. It's an amazing feat.
Yeah.
And to understand where we've come from with technology, you know, different types of insulin and being able to actually go from having to go to the doctor to tell what your blood sugar is, or being able to pee in a cup to tell your blood sugar, to being able to just pick up your smartphone and get a reading 720 times per day is, you know, just amazing advancements. And so we're thankful for that. But we want to find ways to get the access to it a bit more widespread. And so, you know, hopefully we'll get at that point where we can meet with the minister and start to plot ways on which NHI can kind of develop to help more people, because knowing is really half your battle. And that's just it. For people like John and I who are on continuous glucose monitors, our diets can then be tailored to our individual needs. So for me, certain foods that I can eat that may cause my blood sugar to spike, like I can't really eat oranges unless I really plan for it or drink orange juice, because it's so, it gets to my blood sugar levels very quickly. But I know of individuals that are diabetics and they can eat oranges and drink orange juice and their sugars just rise gradually. And so our individual approach to how we eat, you know, it varies. But us being able to monitor how the different foods affect our blood sugars is what's important. So I know, you know, my go-to may be, you know, pork chops with some steamed vegetables and maybe a slice of toast, something like that, you know, to have just a bit of carbs to go in me. And then I don't have to take much insulin that time because it's a lower carb meal. I'll only know that if I'm checking my sugar beforehand and during that time in which that continuous glucose monitor helps. But it is a difficult transition from our normal Bohemian cultural meals to the food that you have to eat. But in our case, we find creative ways to kind of work with the portion sizes or increase the amount of insulin and do some things that, you know, maybe our doctor wouldn't necessarily be very proud of, but sometimes when you're trying to feed those devilish desires, you have to go about it a smart way.
Yep. John?
And now back up to what Dario says as well. Now, my 48 years has not always been a simple road. Now, trust me, I've had major challenges sometimes, you know, along the way. It's kind of hard sometimes, like everything in life. I think you hit the nail on the head when you said the diet is probably the hardest part of this entire condition. Like any diet, anybody goes on the diet, you know it's hard to stick to diet. Whether you're Bahamian, an American, whatever you are, a diet is the hardest part. As a youngster, I went to a diabetic camp, taught me a lot. And we all had a friend called Eddie as a type 1 diabetic. And Eddie was EDI, stood for exercise, diet, and insulin. And out of those three components, exercise is hard to do, but it's a little bit more easier than a diet. You know, you have your friends eating cake, or you go to a restaurant, you want your crap punk. Peas advice. And for years I went, you know, as a youngster, it was easier to drill it into my head. I can't have this. I can't have this. But as time goes on, you can adjust. And my whole eating habits has been more like Weight Watchers, where you watch what you eat. You exchange certain foods for certain other foods. Yes, you're going to cheat. There's no question you are going to cheat. You're going to have a cake with ice cream. You're going to do that. But be prepared that you have to adjust other parts of your meal. You can't have peas and rice, macaroni, potato salad, then have the cake and all these carbs that we're talking about. That's just a lot.
You just ended the whole Bahamian Sunday meal.
But you can do it. You can do it. I'm not saying you can't. You just have to adjust your insulin level. Remember, you got to get and check your blood sugars.
Right.
See, I don't want to give that message that you could eat whatever you want to do, but
right.
I don't want to scare people off to say that you have to eat the vegetable. You have to eat this. You can eat almost anything you want within portions, and cover it with your insulin. And if you possibly could exercise, exercise. It doesn't mean it's the end of the world. It doesn't mean you can't eat anything out there. You just try to eat healthier, but it's okay to do it on occasion type thing, you know? And I do it. I'm the first to admit it.
Nurse, we got 2 minutes left, so you're gonna have pretty much the last word, unless John and or Dario has something really critical they want to add. But so tell us where people can get additional information, what they can do if they feel like maybe I'm somebody needs to go and check myself, or what should people do?
So we have several opportunities available for people to get support. Obviously, you can get support through your own clinic. I personally work over at Family Medicine Center over on Blake Road, but you will actually see me representing ACE Diabetes outside Kelly's Friday. I'm going to be there from about 8:30. So you can come and hang out with me, ask me some questions about diabetes. And I will be there. There's also ACE Diabetes. We're on Zoom. We have a class that we do once a month where you can get all of this information. And I do want to just back up what Dario and John is saying, is that you can have your cake and eat it in the right way. And that's what I want people to go away with today. Diabetes is not doom and gloom at all. But once you have the right education, the right support, you really can thrive with diabetes.
I agree.
The right tools. Yes. I think all the food's got to be thrown in there too. And like the nurse Chase is saying, and Dario said, it's not the end of the world if you're diagnosed. It's a challenge that you can overcome, control, and live a normal life. And we're definite proof of that.
I want to thank you all for joining us today. And listen, feel free to come back anytime you want to continue to educate us, and so people can stay well, and where they find themselves challenged can continue to live within the context of that challenge, the optimal life that God provides. Again, thank you very much, guys. Nurse Anita Cates, Dario Charlton, and John Benjamin. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having
us. Thank you, Mr. Vago.
Thank you.
My pleasure, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, David Williams is going to talk about us. Man, stay tuned. You know, when David is in the house, we're talking about man. We'll be back after this break.
I'm not afraid to take a stand. Everybody,
isn't it time you conquered your investment goals? With RF Mutual Funds, you can access a range of investments within a single fund. That means you get access to top-performing local stocks, along with exposure to international markets, add expert management and competitive returns like 25.16% with our targeted equity fund, and you won't just meet your investment goals, you'll conquer them. Get started with RF Mutual Funds today at rfgroup.com.
Remember when Zoom was just a sound effect? When your living room wasn't your gym? When a cough didn't scare people away? That was the good old days. And thankfully, they are coming back. As things return to normal, remember it is essential to be fully immunized against all vaccine-preventable diseases like COVID-19, diphtheria, tetanus, measles, and influenza. This message is brought to you by PAHO WHO, the Ministry of Health and Wellness, the Caribbean Development Bank, the Government of Canada, and the United States of America.
This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM.
I'm not afraid to take a stand.
Well, Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. I'm so glad that you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Wednesday afternoon. If you want to give us a call at some point, the numbers are 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You could also text us on 422-4796 or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. I have Mr. David Williams. And David, I believe International Men's Day is on the agenda.
What's going on?
Welcome.
Well, first I want to say a pleasant good afternoon to those of your audience tuning in. It's a privilege, Minister Lang, to once again be back with you and to thank Guardian Radio for they have always supported me anytime I make a request for International Men's Day. But even Minister Lang, before I go in there, I just want to touch base. I listened to the gentleman and the lady spoke just now, and this was not a part of the program for International Men's Day, but Sunday coming, the Adventist Health Professionals is having a health fair, and it's absolutely free. And this is one of the things I want to encourage as much men as possible not to meet me there. I want to encourage them to meet me there. So there will be a free, I repeat again, that Sunday coming at the Bahamas Academy School, all day 9 to 5, there'll be free glucose checking. I plan to attend so I can have my blood sugar checked. There's also blood pressure. It's absolutely free. There's eye services. Again, it's absolutely free. And there is dental services. And again, it's absolutely free. Now, we know that us as men, I'll be the chief. We don't like to go to the doctor. I hate the idea of sitting in the dentist chair. But I'm going to take advantage of these free opportunities the Adventist Health Professionals having this coming Sunday, Marshall Road. But more so, I want to put gender aside now and encourage our men and boys, go down there, 9 o'clock, get your free blood sugar, get your eyes checked, have your blood pressure checked, and get your cleaning. They'll do some light dental cleaning. So I just thought this was a good opportunity coming off of what you just talked about, Minister Lang.
Anytime. Yes, man. That makes good sense to mention. And so people have an opportunity to get that free testing so they can know what their status is.
Right. Yes, sir. So what we're planning, International Men's Day celebrated November 19th. It was founded by Jerome T. Luxink. It actually was started by a profession in the United States, but it stopped for a while. And then Jerome T. Luxink in Trinidad revived it, I think, around in 1999. And he recognizing that there was a day to honor women, but there was not a day to honor men. And so he revived it, and it was called International Men's Day. So this Saturday, November 19th, will be celebrated around the world in about 70 to 80 countries. And the focus of IMD, International Men's Day, is promote positive male role models, celebrate positive contributions made by men in society, improve gender relations and equality, eliminate discrimination against our men and boys, right? And also to encourage men to be leaders of the society. And so this is what we're planning to do. The theme for this year is men leading by example, okay? Men leading by example. And every year for the last 4 or 5 years, we have had various ceremonies, services honoring our men. Now, International Men's Day, the founders, the initial committee was actually Keith Cox, the late Terence Bethel. I know you're familiar with Terence Bethel. And myself, we were the first three men had this meeting. As a matter of fact, the awards this coming Saturday is named after him. It'll be the Terence Bethel IMD Awards. But what we're seeking to do is not another organization. We're seeking to bring men organization together. We work closely with the Department of Gender and Family Affairs with the men's desk. Unfortunately, they don't have a men's coordinator this year. But in the past years, we worked with Mr. Henry Johnson in facilitating and touching base with other men organization and bringing them together. And so what we want to do today, as a matter of fact, in very shortly, in another 2 hours, we will be meeting on the corner of Lightburn Avenue and Farrington Road, right by the Washoes, Island Luck Washoes, and Island Luck, the Numbers Place and the Washoes. We're going to have what we call a walk into the community in the Rock Crusher area. Why Rock Crusher? Because myself and Dr. Carlos Reed, we were able to reach out to the mother of the young lady who was murdered about, I think, 2 weeks ago. And so we agreed that we want to come back into the community. And so International Men's Day, led by the President Key Cox, Vice President Apostle Henry Higgins, myself, Curtis Bryan, the Secretary Treasurer, and a number of us, we engaged with a number of organizations, the Urban Renewal Police, and we want to do a walkabout in the community. But it's not just a walkabout, and I just need to be clear. We have not just started this. We've been doing this from last year, going into high-risk communities, talking with young men, offering words of prayer, which is always first priority, and encouraging young men and showing them that there's a better way and there are alternatives. And so we continue today in the Rock Crusher area, 5:30. I've already reached out to the mother of the young lady who was murdered, and I indicated that we want to bring the persons in the community together this evening on the exact spot where her daughter was killed. And she said she's looking forward to it, and she wanted to bring the community together and to show them that there's a better way. And so we're meeting 5:30 today. Anyone wish to be a part of it, whether you're male, whether you're female, young boy, young girl, we're inviting you not to meet us there, but to meet us there 5:30 on the corner of Lightburn Avenue and Farrington Road. As we take a walk in the community, bring your tracts, if you have tracts, bring if you have some other paraphernalia, some positive information on conflict resolution. We're inviting persons to walk with us in that community. Let's sit down, let's talk. Let's talk with our young people and show them, especially our young men, there's a better way and there's an alternative. And then for this week, we also had a service Sunday where we began the week with a service at Chapel on the Hill. And the speaker was the Reverend Anthony Sands, who's president of Prison Fellowship Bahamas and one of our honorees. And then Friday coming, we're having a peace and prayer rally. And it's being held in the Montel Heights community. We have a number of guest artists confirmed, and we bless the Lord for those individuals. Confirmed first is the well-known Sweet Emily, Evangelist Emily. Also, we have Christian Massif. We have Mr. J. We have Big Bro. We have Peter Runks. We have Barry G. We have Leroy Butler. We have Kingdom Mind. And if you have a youth group that wish to be a part of it, we are open. Just simply call me on 433-6917, 433-6917. And if they wish to be a part of it, they can come too and bring a selection. It's a free concert, so it's at the park right there in Montel Heights, and we don't have the resources to pay no group. So all of these persons are giving their service gratis, including our famous Sweet Emily or Evangelist Emily, Christian Massif. And then on Saturday, we're planning to award a number of men who have contributed positively to the society. This coming Saturday, the actual International Men's Day, which is November 19th. So it will be held at 3 p.m., Chapel on the Hill. And we want to invite the men. We want to invite the women to come out. We will offer you some light refreshments. And I just want to share the 10 honorees. And they are Dr. David Allen from the family, a well-known individual, carries my name, so that must be a powerful man. He will be honored for his work he's been doing. Also, Dr. Eric Fox, who we know from Tane Challenge, who is an anger management conflict resolution specialist. And then we want to honor Reverend Anthony Sands. That's my president, Prison Fellowship Bahamas, the organization I've been involved in the prison ministry for 22 years, which I love. Then we have Minister Hugh Rowell. We have Inspector Kelrico Burrows. We have Mr. Omar Thompson. I forget the name of his group, but he's a part of the group with myself and Dr. Reed, the Brotherhood. Then we have Leonard. I only knew him as Links Cavala Ferguson. I knew him from music, being involved with music. He'll be another honoree. Then we have another person, Reverend Sammy Rowell. I know him from the Boys Club. Made him come up to the Boys Brigade. That's what shaped us. To make us who we are today, Reverend Sammy Rowell, but he's well known in the schools for the Boys Club. Then we have everybody know Percy Vola Francis. my man of business being a Saxon superstar. So I'm looking forward to that opportunity for Percy Vola Francis. And the last honoree is Sergeant Rudolph Pratt. And so these individuals are men who have led a positive example of what's happening in the community. And we want to recognize them. We want to honor these individuals. And just before I stop, I want to just go over the itinerary to remind them again. Today, in a short while, I'll be leaving to go to Rock Crusher. We'll meet on the corner of Lightburn Avenue and Farrington Road as we'll go through the community of Lightburn Avenue. Prayers first, because we believe that the hearts of men and women can only be changed through a relationship with Christ. Not your church, nor my church. Not your denomination, nor my denomination. We're talking about a relationship with Christ. Only Christ changes hearts of men, women, boys, and girls. And then we want to, Friday is a concert at the park, Montelites. We're inviting you to come out, be a part of it. Bring your youth group, bring your dance ministry, or whatever youth group who wish to be a part of it to share a positive message. They can join us. And then Saturday is the actual ceremonies, 3 p.m., Chapel on the Hill, with Pastor Nathan Wells. And so we're inviting persons to come out and to support us as we honor men, International Men's Day, November 19, men leading by example. I'll stop there, Minister Line.
Well, thank you very much. That's a full itinerary for sure. David, is there a site or somewhere where people can go and see all of what's scheduled to happen? That way they can take a more careful note.
I am not sure if we had put it up on our Facebook page, but that's why I throw my number there. The International Men's Day site actually gives you information on what International Men's Day is all about. But in terms of the local activities, I don't think we have them on the Facebook page. But anyone, if you desire to, I give my number again. It's 433-6917. I'll repeat slowly. 433-6917. What's up, mate? I will share the information, the flyer. I'll just share it. I'm very open. That's why I chose my number. You can always call me because my passion is men and boys, but particular men's ministry. And so I just want to say, if you have any desire to be a part of IMD or to get involved, and even in prison fellowship, which I've spent 22 years, this is why I promoted a lot. And talking about prison fellowship, we're having an event in Montelites on the 26th, which is the Saturday, the Thanksgiving, giving out some gifts items to the children in the Montelites community. So 433-6917, WhatsApp me, call me, and I will send you the information by WhatsApp as to what the plans are. And I don't want them to forget, Minister Lang, this health fear, it was not a part of IMD, but man, I'm going to be the first. They talked about, Minister Lang, about diabetes. I was diagnosed as pre-diabetic because of the history of my mom and my father. So what it did for me, Minister Lang, it forced me now to have a regular exercise program. I had to change my diet a little because actually I don't eat meat. I haven't eaten meat in 20 plus years. My problem was the sweets. So I had to cut out sodas. Whoa, stop that. That sweet tooth, I had to stop that. The starch, because I love a lot of rice. I had to stop that. So I'm saying as men, I thought because I was not eating meat, I was doing fine. But when I was diagnosed as pre-diabetic, I realized that, no man, Dave, you ain't doing fine. I had to get into my vigorous exercise program. So that's this Sunday, the Adventist Health Professionals. I want to encourage the men to come out and get your blood pressure check. That's free. Get the blood glucose testing. That's free. Get your eye free. Dental service free. As a result of this experience, who knows what life could be saved. So I'm just encouraging us as men, let's do our part. The women have done a good job. And we as men, we need to be example setters. Men are broken too. We know that we all go through our hurt. We go through our brokenness. But as men, we need to support each other. Let's come out to these events. Let's continue to encourage one another. Let's continue to support each other because we need to rescue our men. Listen to me, in the prison, like I say, 22 years, I've seen so many men go in that door, come out, and go back. I'm tired of seeing our young men. There's some 1,300 young men, men incarcerated at the Department of Corrections. We need to do something to stop the recidivism, but even as a preventative measure. That's what I want to share, Dr. Minister Lai.
Thank, Thank you very much, David. That's a lot, man. We appreciate you, man. We appreciate the work that you're doing. And so people take note. David, anytime you have to get the word out, let us know, eh?
Thank you very much, sir. I appreciate it.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we'll wrap up. We'll be back after this break.
I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand. Everybody, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather, cold or warm. Send you know that you're not alone. Holla if you feel like you've been down the same road.
How important collecting your money can be to the success of your business. Start your relationship with Fidelity today so that we can show you the many options available to you with our merchant services. From click and pay options online to merchant terminals and e-commerce options, we're here to help your business succeed. For more details, speak to one of our business development officers at 356-7764 in Nassau or 352-6676 in Freeport. Visit our website at fidelitygroup.com or visit any of our branches.
Fidelity, we're good for you.
At a time when jobs are hard to find, crime is a concern, and Bahamians are uncertain about the future of the country, there is one paper you can rely on as your source of news and commentary. The Nassau Guardian delves deeper into the issues. We ask the tough questions. We tell your stories. If you haven't already, pick up a copy today. The Nassau Guardian. News and views that matter since 1844.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. I'm so glad that you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Wednesday afternoon. In this last couple of minutes, let me mention something here about something I heard not just the PM talk about, but I also heard others mention about this FTX situation and our communicating, being careful what we communicate to the world about ourselves. Firstly, what is it that we can say about ourselves that FTX's situation itself is not communicating to the world? Are we serious? Like, because the fact of the matter is, none of us should be out there talking about anything we don't know anything about. That's the first thing. So if you don't know anything about anything, and you really shouldn't be saying anything about it. You should speak about what you know. And that's whether you are an official in the Bahamas or you are a citizen in the Bahamas or you are an activist in the Bahamas. You should speak about what you know. If you are asking questions, that's perfectly okay. What happened to FTX? Was anything involved that we should know about? Did our regulators do what they were supposed to do? did the government do anything that it wasn't supposed to do? You know, what is the impact? There's nothing wrong with that. I don't listen. When we have leadership in the Commonwealth of the Bahamas who accuse each other of being corrupt during election campaigns, who accuse the whole government of being corrupt, we can't talk about how we talk about our country. Let's be real. Come on, we got to be real. We have political campaigns where we accuse government leaders of being corrupt, right? The Minister of Finance, the Prime Minister, the this one and the next one. And we're concerned now about what is said about FTX. Seriously? Come on. We shouldn't be talking about something we don't know anything about. We should ask any question about anything we want. The media of the Bahamas should dig as deep as they could dig about this matter and any other matter they want, because that's a transparent democracy you live in. Let's don't play that game. That's not the game we want to play. We want to be factual. There's nothing wrong with evaluating, analyzing, and exposing the truth of what happens to us. That's good for us. It's how we learn. This notion that somehow we can keep from the world things about ourselves that's going to cause them to be overly frightened about us, absolute nonsense. We have over 100 murders in the country. Can you keep that from the world? I mean, what are we saying? Should a cabinet minister go out there and say something stupid that's not true or they don't know about? No, they shouldn't. Should a opposition personality go out there and say something stupid or they don't know about? No, they shouldn't. Should a journalist do so? Should a lecturer or professor do so? No. But if you know what you know, you go out there, and if you want to talk about it, you go out there and you talk about it. This is not a totalitarian society in which we are trying to keep secrets because we think the world is going to make look better at us if we keep the secret. That's nonsense. FTX was put on the stage of the world because we blew them up when they came here. And we were unashamed to put them there. Now that things are blown up, all of a sudden we should be careful about how we talk about them. Yes, we should be careful how we talk about juice, how we talk about apples, how we talk about oranges. Because if we talk about them and don't know what we're saying, then we are doing a disservice. So don't talk about things you don't know anything about. That's true. If you want to express an opinion, express it as an opinion. If you want to make an observation, you express it as an observation. Don't say a thing is a fact that you don't know to be a fact. So nobody should do that. But I do not buy into this. Be careful that you're doing something to the country, because again, my litmus test is when we get in political campaigns, we don't have any difficulty accusing prime ministers and ministers and members of parliament and the like of being corrupt. I agree with the Prime Minister 100%. The Bahamas is done. FTX may be on our minds a year from now, but FTX is unlikely to be the story of the Bahamas a year from now. Is FTX going to bring the Bahamas down, even bring its digital prospects and opportunities down? I do not believe so at all. It's going to take a hit for sure, but I don't believe that. Will we come out of this stronger? We absolutely will. Whenever you get punched in the nose and punched in the face, you better learn some lesson. So we will, but let's not play this game of caution about what we say so the world doesn't think a certain way about us. We can never play that caution because we have said more about us negatively to the world, and I'm talking about the official political representation in the Bahamas over many years has done more to tell the world about how sour and sucked we might be than any single person on planet Earth. We do it every single election campaign. We do it every single election cycle. We get up in the House of Assembly, we bash each other over all the incompetencies that we have exercised over the years. Come on, man. What is it we think? First of all, don't let nobody fool you. The Bahamas may be in the news because of FTX today, but the vast majority of people, the vast majority of time when they're going on with their lives throughout the world, are not thinking about the Bahamas. I could guarantee you that. The ones who may be looking at a vacation may be thinking about you. Some business people may be thinking about you. And yes, you can be harmed by negative news, but that never seemed to stop us before from saying negative things about ourselves in the past. Bahamians get on these radio shows all day long. These radio shows all day long. And what do we say? Oh, we're so backward and incompetent. We're not like the United States. We're not like Singapore. We're not like this place in Finland. And we say it all day long. We get on Facebook and we kill ourselves all day long. And we say, well, we don't want the foreigner to do it. Well, maybe you don't want the foreigner to do it. But even if the foreigner doesn't do it, we spend enough time on TikTok, YouTube, WhatsApp, Facebook, Instagram, doing it to ourselves. That's not the world we want to live in, where we can't say what we believe to be true about ourselves, where we can't state facts about ourselves, where we can't say what's negative or positive about ourselves. Why would I want to do that? Why would I? No, don't say stupid things about yourself that not true. You don't know to be true. Don't say stupid things about yourself to try and harm yourself. Don't do that. But I'm sorry. Listen, if we really messed up with FTX, if we did, I'm not saying we did. I don't believe we did. I agree with the prime minister that I do not see anything that our regulators could have done to prevent what I now know or understand to have taken place with respect to FTX. And that the response that they are making is a response they are able to make because the framework exists to be able to make that response. So I agree with that 100%. 100%. I agree with that. But if we messed up in any way, what's the problem with saying, boy, we messed that one up. You think we could whisper that and the world won't know? Seriously? No, man. Come on. Y'all wake up. Let's wake up. We live in the most transparent world on planet in human history. There's never been a time in human history where it's been harder to hide nonsense. Right? There's no whisper campaign we could utter while we discuss this matter about FTX. People are investigating this. They're writing about this. Y'all articles and articles are being sent to me every single hour. Articles are being sent to me. People digging into this. What are we going to hide? And what difference is it going to make? It's going to be better for us that people think, you know, they in the Bahamas, they have real analysts. They have real journalists. They have real competencies that are capable of discussing this matter and bringing issues to the fore. And that's a great thing. And the political representatives of the country ought to speak to it. They ought to ask and raise the required questions. They ought not to say dumb things. They ought not to say inaccurate things. They ought not to say non-factual things. But raising questions, that's what they ought to do. And the government ought to provide the answers. That's what it ought to do. And it ought not to cower. And it ought not to be afraid to say to the world, yes, we are looking into the matter. We're doing what has to be done. Our authorities are dealing with it. That's what you should do. You think I'm going to be concerned that other countries think that they are so so efficient and competent that they don't get messed up? Let me call some names for you. There were some people who are in jail. You know, you don't go to jail because you did your thing in secret and nobody found out. You know, you go to jail because you did your thing and people find out, prosecute you and convict you and you go to jail. Well, you check these countries in the world and see how many people and folks in jail. Why were they in jail? Because they violated their systems. They breached their laws. And we are now gun shy because something happened in our jurisdiction that we now need to make sure what all that is appropriate to be done should be done and that we should run around whispering about it? No. 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 I get people reaching out to me about this, wanting a story as international people. I'm not concerned about whether or not my speaking about it in a way that reflects the facts as I know them is going to be a problem for the Bahamas or not. I haven't spoken to anybody. And that's only because I don't want to speak to nobody. Not at the moment. Not like that. But, you know, we shouldn't do that. We shouldn't do that. And I'm sorry. I don't think that the opposition should be subjected to that. And I don't think that the government should be subjected to that. I don't think we should do that to each other. We should have a fulsome discussion about this. We should be unbridled about discussing what happened, about the facts, and about getting the facts. And there's nothing about this story, nothing about this story that could be worse for us than the way we accuse each other of corruption. Nothing about this story that Sam Bankman-Fried and his colleagues have done could be worse for the Commonwealth of the Bahamas than what we do when we accuse our leadership of corruption. If somebody out there can tell me that that's worse, that Sam Bankman's thing is worse, why? Because it involves lots of people, money, than having a corrupt prime minister we accuse each other of, having corrupt ministers of finance, having a corrupt court system and these kinds of things. Could anything be worse for a country than that? Because if the subsets in your country, like a business, international or domestic, is great, but your country is corrupt, well, how does that work well for us? Come on, man. Let's wake up. That's not a point. That's not a point. And I don't suggest and recommend that any media personality, I don't recommend that any activist in the country, I don't recommend that any political representative in the country shy off from wanting to find out and seeking to find out all that they can about the matter and articulating what they find. Right? That makes no sense. Speak the facts, speak the truth, ask questions. Don't say stupid things. Don't say inaccurate things. Don't say non-factual things. But for God's sake, do not be silent in the face of inquiry or in the face of findings that are factual. Don't do it. Makes no sense. I don't want to live in that country. I do not. Hate me. Be angry with me, be offended by me. I don't care. I do not want to live in that country. We are a country. And as we move and as we develop, we are going to make mistakes. I'm not saying we made a mistake with FTX. We, though, as a country, we have made mistakes. We will continue to make mistakes. And what we do, we'll continue to grow and learn. Others in our country will make mistakes, and others in our country will do wrong in our country. That's the reality of the living universe we live in. Don't be shy about it. And don't cower in the face of it. Find clarity of thought and precision of purpose and correctness of action in the face of it and move the heck on. Nobody could ask more than that from you, or from me, or from our country. You've been listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. You all have a great Monday. We'll be back tomorrow. God's best.